While the U.S. may have a formal reality star vying for a return to office, in Kenya, there's a whole reality show devoted to empowering new leaders.
I am ready to be the president of this country.
Miss President is a TV competition show where women compete to become a fictional head of state. But will make-believe campaigns actually help women and decrease the very real-life problem of gender imbalance in Kenya's parliament? Welcome to The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, a show from Foreign Policy about women creating change through economic empowerment. I'm Rena Ninen. Today we're looking at ways to increase the number of women in politics and those who are trying to break down barriers as well as the threat of violence.
Most women are not participating because they are afraid of being molested by our male counterparts.
What it'll take to widen the pipeline of women into elected office in the global South. That's all just ahead.
When history repeats itself, so does care. Since 1945, when the original care package inspired a spirit of shared humanity around the world, care has seen war and famine, pandemics, and natural disasters. But we've also seen the power of hope and resilience. Now, care works in over 110 countries, reaching over 170 million people. But we need you to help everyone reach their full potential. Join at care.org.
This is another WHFR special program, The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women.
From Foreign Policy, I'm Rena Ninen. Welcome to The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, or HERO, a show about women creating change through economic empowerment. Today, we're focusing on inspiring grassroots efforts to increase women's political leadership in Africa. Later in the hour, you'll hear about Nigeria's push to get more women on the ballot and a full understanding of the barriers in their way and the potential ways to break through. But first, we'll begin in Kenya, a place that's taken a novel approach to courting and cultivating female leadership, having them compete on reality television.
How long has your journey at leadership been? Because I know this is not your first shot at leadership.
I would put it at about close to 15 years.
Whoa.
What you're hearing is a clip from 2019, where Nereya Amundi Okech, a local leader in her early 40s, was auditioning for a new reality TV show in Kenya, but not just any reality program.
I am ready to be the president of this country.
Okay.
Yes.
Nereya is vying to be on Miss President, a new show produced and aired on KTN, one of Kenya's largest television stations that reaches millions of viewers each week. Over the course of 26 episodes, more than 1,000 female contestants compete to become Kenya's next head of state, so to speak. But while the stakes are lower than a real presidential campaign, the competition was fierce, especially for Nereya, who desperately wanted to prove herself and her country that she and other women could be real leaders in society. As she explained in her audition, having a career was a dream that had for so long seemed unattainable. 2 months after she graduated from high school, she became pregnant.
And of course, my father was not amused. There's no father who would be amused. So I did the next thing that any teenager would do. I ran away from home, I eloped.
More kids followed.
Sometimes I tear up when I'm in the community and I meet 19-year-old girls who got pregnant and never had a chance to go back to school. Because I had finished my high school, but I still, even with four children, was able to pick myself up and get to school and be an accountant and get a master's degree. So when I talk to the girls, when I see a pregnant girl, then I pull them and I tell them that you can be me.
Beyond her professional achievements, Nereya was also a local politician. So what happens to Nereya after this audition? And what can we learn from Miss President? Can a show really create a bunch of new national female politicians, leaders that we can hold accountable? Reporting from Nairobi, Kenya, Eunice Maina takes it from here.
The story of Miss President is quite unique. According to media experts, it's the only TV show that's training women to be presidential. And in Kenya, it attracted an impressive audience, around 3.5 million weekly viewers. But it isn't a big studio production. A non-profit called Media Focus in Africa actually made the show, with funding from the European Union and UN Women, among others. Originally, they were just trying to decrease violent extremism in Kenya.
This plan ballooned into a bigger idea with a seemingly more audacious outcome. If women's leadership was key to dealing with these issues, why not push for women to get into higher roles of leadership?
According to staff from Media Focus in Africa, they got the idea for Miss President from a show in the Palestinian territories called The President. It was a reality show in the early 2010s where young Palestinian leaders competed to be the next president. So they adopted this idea to focus on training women leaders to counter extremism and develop female leadership. Thus, the title, Miss President. Over 1,000 women applied to participate in the show's first season, which aired in 2019. Only 71 contestants were chosen to participate, including Nerea Amondi Okech.
I am ready to be the president of this country.
Okay. Yes. I spoke with Nerea at a restaurant in Nairobi recently to hear what she got out of the show and why she chose to participate.
Well, Miss President for me was an opportunity to represent my county. I was a nominated MCA back then. And my county, Homa Bay, was always in the news for negative things. When it comes to the ranking, we would always be counted from the bottom.
Nerea was a nominated member of the County Assembly of Homa Bay, which means her party nominated her to be in the assembly. Homa Bay is one of the 47 counties in Kenya, and it's located in Nyanza on the shores of Lake Victoria. The main economic activities there are agriculture and fishing. Homa Bay has also been among the counties with the highest rates of teenage pregnancies and HIV. According to a 2020 report by Kenya's National Crimes Research Center, gender-based violence cases were above the national average. During her time at the County Assembly, Nerea pushed for a number of gender equality policies, including ways to reduce domestic violence, and she thought being on Miss President could help her achieve her goals even more.
Using the title Miss President to attract talent and train women, quote unquote, to be president and run the country. You know, but literally, it was an opportunity for women to showcase their skill set, to showcase how they perceive things, to showcase that their space is deserved. And I think for me, that was the biggest attraction. So I decided to apply and, you know, make sure that my county is on top of the country.
Nerea then made it into the second round with 40 or so other contestants. Each week, they were trained in different topics related to Kenyan politics, including national security, economic policy, and environmental issues, among others.
I liked the fact that we had a mix of both theoretical training, the academic aspect of it, and field training, because more often than not, leaders tend to get disconnected from the electorate.
Nerea generally performed well. She had a lot of confidence and a solid professional background. She says one of the episodes she appreciated the most was about the environment.
I went to look at how sustainability approaches are working, how we are looking at recycling materials. I think for me that was one of the biggest lessons.
Here is Nerea in that episode giving a speech in front of the judges about how she will make Kenya more sustainable.
As president, in the next 5 years, I want to impact every household by reducing air pollution by up to 20%.
She then suggests a bunch of things to accomplish this, including jobs, recycling, capacity building, and waste management. Nerea was not up for elimination a lot, but she was in this episode. And here, You can hear where the show provides some of its most important training. The judges' feedback.
We are getting like, yes, Nerea knows what she wants, she knows what she wants to do, but which one does she want the most? And that is what is lacking. So we want to believe that if we give you another chance, you are able to learn how to focus. And every time you have an agenda to push, pick one and push it to the core. For that reason, we'll give you another chance in the academy.
Nerea's confidence and way of handling the competition's pressure kept her going week after week, despite the challenges. During the whole Miss President competition, Nerea was pregnant. She was expecting her fifth child. So, how did she keep it together?
I knew the only thing I was very sure of is there are women who are watching me who also look at pregnancy as some kind of a barrier to success. And I had to show them that you can succeed despite pregnancy, despite, you know, disability, despite, you know, poverty and all these dynamics that hamper women's progress.
She shares one of her fondest memories as a contestant.
My favorite happened to be when we went to Naivasha. We went to speak to the flower farm workers. And you typically know that women make up a huge population of flower farm workers. So we are talking about rights for their women when they're pregnant. We are talking about issues of sexual harassment and exploitation at the workplace. We are talking about equal pay for equal work. So we held this whole community dialogue forum.
By this point, her baby was due any day.
I think the crowning moment for me was that we went out of the town hall venue and did an actual rally where I'd had a cesarean section surgery like within 2 weeks, and I was up there, you know, dancing, because as a politician who's looking for votes, then you have to, you know, connect to the audience, and music is a great way to connect. Of course, everybody was panicking, thinking, oh my God, she's going to collapse the next minute. Yeah. But I think the energy of it all got me through, so that was my best.
20 episodes in and about to give birth, Nerea is still on the Miss President show. But can Nerea make it into the final round of Miss President? In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, a production of Foreign Policy. I'm Rena Ninen. To hear more about women breaking barriers, please check out our podcast, The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women. Our new series, All About Girls, is out now. So far in the show, we've heard about how Nerea Amundi Okech was doing on a new reality television show in Kenya called Miss President. The goal was to show the public how a woman could someday become the president of Kenya and develop these contestant skills to get there. Nerea had some setbacks, but was mostly doing well, despite being very pregnant. She actually made it to the final five contestants. Reporter Eunice Minan shares the rest of Nerea's story.
At this point, their challenges became more presidential. They campaigned. They also visited Kenya's actual president at the time, Uhuru Kenyatta.
If we positively engage our women by creating opportunities and giving them chances, right? What we're actually doing is not actually just empowering a woman. You are actually empowering the nation.
And their last challenge, a presidential debate.
I have been able to go out and demonstrate that this is Nerea, I am here, this is what I can do.
It was a stressful moment for Nerea, but she made sure she was well prepared.
I think building up to the announcement, I was in panic mode. But one thing that I did that was good, I mean, and this goes for every woman, if you need to build your confidence, you make sure that you're looking great. So first of all, I made sure that I was smart. Yeah, so I had a really nicely designed gown.
She then focused on the bigger picture.
When I sat there with the other four women, in the hour leading to the announcement, it wasn't about Nerea anymore. My emotions changed from panicking to wanting it so badly, but my emotions changed to what we have been able to showcase, you know, as Kenyan women. I embraced those women with full knowledge that any one of us who made it on that stage that day is good enough.
Viewers called in and voted for the woman they wanted to be Miss President. Nerea and the four other finalists are holding hands as they wait for the results. The announcer faces the audience.
Are you ready to know who Miss President is?
Well, the public has voted, and the contestant with the highest number of votes is Nerea.
Nerea won. She asks to hold her newborn, who is off stage. With a huge smile and tears in her eyes, she addresses the audience.
I dedicate this to Kenyan voices, every one of you who has watched me through the show. I am proud to stand here as a leader.
After the Miss President show was over, Nerea went back to Homa Bay and continued advocating for the rights of women, girls, and children.
I think one of my best moments was the child welfare and protection policy.
The law in her county protects children up to 18 years from all types of abuse and provides strategies for dealing with instances of abuse.
And I'm glad that Homa Bay County, whose governor is a woman, Honorable Gladys Wanga, is doing great, and she has revived that policy, and I've seen them doing public participation for the policy, and I think they're now validating it. I'm happy that their agenda did not die, even though my term ended.
After winning Miss President, Nerea was determined to seek higher office in real life. While a ward representative at the time, she campaigned to win a seat in the national government. Unfortunately, she did not manage to win her 2022 election. But all was not lost. Earlier this year, the county government of Homa Bay launched a policy framework meant to address issues related to gender-based violence, another issue she advocated for. So, how did the show compare to being a real politician? And what did the show not teach Nerea about running for office?
I think one of the biggest challenges that I now take very seriously is that women barely have the resources to compete at that fair level. Because Miss President was talking about, you know, you can't be elected because of how good you were. But at the end of the exercise, it wasn't about that. It was about how do you mobilize resources to make sure that you win. And it's everything to do with assets which are in a financial form. So I think when organizations come to train women, especially in Africa, for leadership and seeking political office, I think the structure needs to change.
She says sometimes candidates mobilize voters using money or other goods. In other words, with bribes. While technically illegal, unfortunately, this is a common practice in Kenya, and it puts women who already have fewer resources at an even greater disadvantage. So, she thinks the show could have emphasized fundraising more than it did. But overall, Nerea very much believes in the mission of Miss President. While most reality TV shows lack substance, this one not only brought real issues to the attention of millions of Kenyans, it also provided visibility to Kenya's need for more female leadership. Though Nerea did not win her higher office, it turns out that two of her fellow contestants did. The two are current members of parliament, and she couldn't have been happier for them.
Every one of those women is so good. So for me, it was about all of us.
While one reality TV show can't necessarily change stereotypes about women in leadership, it can certainly help.
As the winner of season one, I have had so much opportunity, so much visibility, that if another woman gets an opportunity that is equivalent or greater, I will celebrate them. I can create opportunities for women and they will thrive, I will be in the backseat. So for me, it's not about me winning. And I think that is what I learned. If you want the women movement to thrive, It shouldn't be about one woman winning all the time. One woman being elected every election cycle, one woman getting nominated. It's about how do you make sure that all women are moving together.
For The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, I'm Eunice Minor.
Miss President had a second season in 2022, the same year as Kenya's national election. Media Focus in Africa and UN Women are continuing to work with women for the show. Media Focus in Africa hopes to secure funding for a third season. While the show can't obviously take full credit for this, the number of women in Kenya national government positions did improve in the 2022 elections. Overall, the percentage increased from about 9% in 2017 to more than 10.5% in 2022, a small yet significant jump. So the fact that the show reached millions of viewers and a handful of contestants actually went on to win national elections demonstrates how powerful mass media can be in changing gender stereotypes about women in leadership. But getting more women in office will take many different approaches. I'm reminded of a conversation I had with Berkeley professor Amanda Clayton about gender quotas. On the one hand, they can be really effective at increasing the number of women in government.
I think quotas are certainly a way to do it and to do it quickly. So countries like Namibia, South Africa, they went from less than 20% women in office to 40 or parity within a couple of years. So quotas are a way to fast track women's representation, and sometimes they work really well. I am definitely a proponent of quotas in cases where you can bring women in as candidates, and especially when they're paired with strong women's movements and a lot of government attention to why these quotas are necessary in the first place.
In Uganda, for example, it's been very successful at changing the policy landscape for women and girls.
So in Uganda, they adopted a quota back in 1989, and it has ushered in a sea change, a huge number of women in politics, over what we often think of the critical threshold of 30%. And the women there are quite remarkable, and they'll often hold the government to account for issues that are really important to them, particularly issues around women's rights. And just to give you an example of this, several years ago, it came to the attention of women in the Ugandan parliament that not enough money was being spent on maternal health. And in fact, there was a woman, a parliamentary staffer, who died in childbirth. And this was really a rallying cry to women in the Ugandan parliament that more money, more government funds needed to be dedicated to maternal health. And they actually shut the government down. They refused to legislate. They refused to show up to their jobs until the president, Museveni, dedicated or promised that he would put more money into maternal health care. So this is an example of women coming together and using their power to bring attention to an issue that it would be hard to imagine would get a lot of attention if women weren't there.
Powerful, right? But unfortunately, the solution is not as simple as just having a gender quota, especially if it's imposed from up on top, like in Lesotho. They passed a one-third gender quota law in 2005, but it was so unpopular that it was later overturned in 2011.
I think what we really learned from the Lesotho case is that you can't just have a government come in and tell people from one day to the next, now we have a very restrictive quota policy. I think you really need to have a lot of buy-in from local groups, from local movements, often women's movements, and I think that really helps give the quota a lot of legitimacy.
Basically, there needs to be a lot of effort to engage the public to support women leaders. Clayton also values investing in women's leadership from the ground up.
One way to try to do it is to also try to think about ways to increase the number of women candidates.
So as we can see, there's no silver bullet to getting more women in office. But programs like Miss President that train female candidates and influence the public to support more women in leadership do make an impact. They're effective tools. Next up, in Nigeria, the share of women in government is among the lowest in the world. A number of public initiatives try to change this, including promises from political parties themselves. But they failed. Why?
Most women are not participating because they are afraid of being molested by our male counterparts being stigmatized.
The story of Nigeria's efforts to get more women on the ballot and the ongoing battle to break through gender barriers. Up next, after the break. Welcome back to The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, a production of Foreign Policy. I'm Rena Ninen. And just a reminder, if you want to listen to other episodes of the show, please do subscribe and follow our podcast. That way you'll hear about our new season, out now, which is all about girl. Now we head to Nigeria.
Those who are in support of the motion say aye. And those who are against say nay. The ayes have it.
What you're listening to is a parliamentary session in Nigeria. You can hear dozens of votes. But what you won't hear are a lot of female voices. That's because women make up less than 4% of Nigeria's parliament. Nigeria ranks among the bottom 10 countries for female representation, despite political initiatives to increase those numbers. But why?
Most women are not participating because they are afraid of being molested by our male counterparts, being stigmatized. But if you are determined and you remove fear, you make it. Why not?
This is Kate Raymond Mamuno. She comes from Adamawa State, which is in northeast Nigeria. There are 25 parliamentarians representing the region. Mamuno is the only female. Why is she the lone female parliamentarian? There are many reasons for this. First, women often face widespread harassment and need to fight against deep-seated gender stereotypes. And practically speaking, they usually have less money, and money is crucial to run a campaign.
Honestly, we are lagging behind when it comes to funding.
Mamuno says she was motivated to become a politician because of disadvantages she faced. One of the biggest disadvantages? Education.
I want to level the ground for every girl child in my constituency in particular. I want to start because I was a victim of the girl child education.
Her father refused to pay for her school as a child because she was a girl. And to many, education was an investment that seemed wasted on girls.
At the end of the day, we were going back to our husband's houses and whatever, that kind of mentality, you know. We were left at the mercy of our mothers.
Thankfully, her mother cared. She found a way to pay for her daughter's school fees.
I remembered her elder brother, who was a major in the army. So he took care of me educationally and otherwise.
Mamuno thinks one of the ways to increase women leaders in Nigeria is to start at the root of the issue, get more girls in schools.
I have to break that ceiling and ensure that a girl child in my area is carried along.
As we mentioned, Mamuno did not have a lot of campaign financing, unlike many politicians. So how did she win a seat against the odds? And what are some of the most promising solutions to get more women into government in Nigeria? We'll find out just ahead. But first, we turn to Nicole Grossman from the American University. Grossman conducted dozens of interviews with female candidates who ran for office in Nigeria last year. These women ran with the main political party there, which had a big initiative to increase its female representation. And yet, they failed to deliver this promise. What Grossman and her co-author, Olumi Obeshison, learn from female candidates is eye-opening and gives a much fuller picture of what Nigerian politics is like for women.
We've been focusing on the APC, the All Progressives Congress, which is the ruling party of the current president and the former president, mostly because they are the biggest in the country. They are well known. They have a fairly good rate of getting women to run for office and be elected comparatively to the other parties. But at the national level, they'll say one thing, but what happens in reality is completely different. So, for instance, the APC said, we're going to waive the nomination fee for any female aspirants. Anyone who wants to run, we're going to waive that fee. They had 800 women show up to register for the national level politics on this free waiver, but they made them pay for their own transportation to Abuja to do it. They had to pay for, you know, all of their own hotels and everything in order to do this. And women can't afford to do these things, especially if they're running for a more localized office and not a national level office. And so these incentives are often seen more as publicity stunts.
What are these other incentives that on the surface seem like they're going to help but really don't help?
They keep making more and more of these official groups that are set up to encourage and support women through things like mentorship programs for those who've been in politics for a while to assist those who are maybe new. Those have been unbelievably unsuccessful. The competitiveness of the women who have been previously successful in Nigerian politics, they basically don't want to be assisting those who are new and up and coming. They're seen as threats to their position. There's this idea that only so many women will ever be elected to office. And so the women are even more competitive with each other than the men because there's so few spots that are given to women each year. So these mentorship programs are really this kind of publicity idea. But in reality, what they're getting is sometimes false advice, like actual attempts to hinder somebody's campaign as well.
In 1999, the goal was to have 30% participation of women in politics. And at that time, there was actually 12% participation. 24 years later, in 2023, there's 4%. How do you explain that?
So I think one of the things that's really important is remembering that in 1999, the country was so excited. They were so excited for democracy, right? They had just come out of this military rule that was extremely difficult for many, many people. All these parties were being formed. People really wanted to be engaged in the process. And I think women were just as engaged, just as excited about their ability to start being represented within government. I think as we have seen the democratic process seem to deteriorate somewhat over the last 24 years of politics, it has been a discouraging factor. And I think that is one reason why women are less and less likely. They aren't seeing the changes that they were so excited for. They're seeing all of this negativity toward them for just wanting to be engaged to begin with in politics. All these hurdles exist.
What do you think people who don't follow Nigerian politics would be surprised to learn about women in politics in Nigeria?
So there are a lot of nuances that I think, particularly those of us in the global north, would not think about as being barriers for women in politics that exist within Nigerian society. And so one of those is what we refer to as statelessness. And what that means is that women typically will run for office in the state that they were raised in, which is the state of their father. But once they get married, if they move to another state, technically they should be allowed to run for office in the state of their husband or the state of their father. But in reality, they're often denied both, being told when they go to submit nomination forms, they're often told, oh, you actually have to run in the state of your father, or you have to run in the state of your husband. And they get pushed back and forth, something that would not occur to most of us who don't study Nigerian politics, right? That is one of the issues that has come up. Another issue is just the financial component of what it takes to run an election in Nigeria. Elections in the United States are extremely expensive. The last election in Nigeria in 2023 actually cost more than the elections in the United States in real dollars. Tons of money goes into those elections. And women in Nigeria are often economically disadvantaged for cultural reasons, for economic reasons. And so just to get your own nomination forms submitted, it can cost over $1 million naira. It's a ton of money for somebody in Nigeria.
Which is how much in US dollars?
You're looking at, well, around $1,500 just to submit your name for candidacy to run. And I want to also say that this is all unofficial money. Essentially, this is bribes that you have to pay in order. So there's an official amount you have to pay. And then there's this unofficial amount that you have to pay in order to actually get your name into the system. And so this is extremely difficult for a lot of women. And so they resort to what are called godfathers. They look for people who are politically savvy, who are well off, to sponsor their candidacy. The difficulty with doing it that way, one is many women have reported being asked to commit sexual favors in order to get that sponsorship to begin with, which of course is not how politics should work. But number two, if you do have a sponsor in that way and you get into office, then the expectation is that they will get paid back in full in some way. And so the community ends up not benefiting because so much has to get diverted to contracts that benefit your godfather or things along those lines. And so it really, that system is really not a great way to work.
When you talk to these female candidates who wanted to run, what are some of the themes in the interviews? What did you learn?
Yeah, so there's a few things we've learned. One is, I guess, as we've already talked about, is the kind of financial component is unbelievably stressful for them. The women often said that the party leaders themselves are the problem. The party leaders are what is keeping them from even getting out of the primaries, because the party leaders are essentially selling whoever will pay them the most to the delegates. They will straight up ask for a bribe, and then you pay it, and they'll say, well, I just got this from this person, so can you up it? And then once the delegates are told, here's who you should be voting for based on whoever paid the highest. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the women said that the biggest hurdle they actually have is getting out of the primaries because their own party leaders are so corrupt. The other thing that I think is interesting is like a couple of women have talked to us about how this initiative for a free ballot or a free nomination form is actually hurting them. And it is being used against them by the men they're running against, right?
How so?
Yeah, so the men will say, they will say things like, why would you elect this woman? She doesn't even care enough about you to spend her own money on getting into this campaign. Right? She's not really dedicated to this. She's just doing it because it's free. Right?
And that messaging works.
And that messaging works.
So you talk about party leaders, you talk about corruption. What else makes it harder for women to enter politics in Nigeria versus other places?
Cultural and religious beliefs are really difficult. One of the things that I think is really interesting is if you look at those women who actually have chosen to run, particularly in the north, where women have less individual freedom, they tend to be more tied to what their husband prefers or father prefers. Those that tend to run are often divorced or widowed women.
Why is that?
Because the men won't let them. Because men don't want to, even if they do support them, even if they do support their wife running for office, the second she actually starts to do that, other men in the community will come and tell him that he doesn't have control of his wife. His wife must be a prostitute if she's out all late on these campaign trails, you know, and they will shame him to the point that she then ends up removing herself from the race. Mm. And this is a huge problem in the North. The actual meetings oftentimes are in the middle of the night because people have families and they work. And so that is the time they actually hold a meeting for state office or their local LGA, their local government area. It'll be a meeting that starts at 2 a.m. and husbands won't let their wives do that. And so there's very much a cultural and often religiously imposed hurdles that women are struggling to get into politics because of. And this is less so in the South, but it still does exist in the South. I don't want to make it sound like this is just a Northern problem.
So if incentives do not work in Nigerian politics, what in your experience does work?
So there's a few things that have been successful. And so, for instance, in Adamawa states, we had the possibility of the very first woman governor. She ran on the APC platform. She has been a previous senator. Her name is Benani. Everyone was really excited about this opportunity. Ultimately, she did not win the election, although that case is currently still in court. But what made her successful is the fact that she's self-made. She has a lot of money, so she can run, which is a big thing. She has done a lot in her communities. She is known for being useful for the community as a whole instead of what typically happens, which is paying off individuals in order to get votes. She works to kind of develop the community, which is really, really helpful. And people see that and recognize that in her. But the biggest thing that makes her a great kind of model for how Nigerians might be moving forward is that she has the support of many educated men. And so if you talk to men who, you know, in the state who are highly educated, who are involved in not necessarily politics, but maybe in the business world or other areas, they all see her as somebody who's really competent, somebody who cares about her community, a woman leader who doesn't just support women, which is something that is kind of a concern men often have in Nigeria in supporting a woman in politics. And so I think that one of the ways forward is obviously women supporting women more, but also having educated men be more outspoken about their support for women and kind of helping within their communities support women candidates a bit more. I think that would be extremely helpful to see happen.
There's only 4% of women who are elected officials in Nigerian politics. 24 years ago, they were aiming for 30%. Do you have any hope that the system will change and allow for more female participation? And what will it take to get there?
Interestingly, the very last question we ask every single person we talk to is, will we ever see that number in our lifetime? And women are hopeful. Even they all say absolutely. Some of them say as early as 2027.
How? I'm looking at the numbers. 4%.
I know.
How is that possible, Nicole? How can they be optimistic?
Well, I think one thing is that Nigerian women are unbelievably resilient. A lot of them, even if they themselves aren't running anymore, they are still advocates. They are still out there trying to get women to run, trying to find good candidates. And a lot of them say that they feel that women are finally reaching kind of that breaking point. They're reaching that point where they're saying, we're done being pushed aside. We're done having our dreams crushed because we're women, which is essentially how they feel they're being treated. It's just because they're women. And so you're seeing more and more and more organizations of women at the local level, at the state level, who are starting to kind of get together and push for these changes. I've talked to people in places like Kenya and Senegal and Rwanda and those who have tried to, who have been successful somewhat in increasing the number of women representatives. And they all say the same thing, is that it wouldn't have happened without the law. To move from, you know, being a signatory of declarations to having literal laws requiring affirmative action. And it wouldn't have happened without external pressure. And so I think you need to see really responsible businesses, international businesses who care about true democratic institutions saying, we aren't going to work in your country under these conditions. And so that's, I think, Nigeria is going to have a very similar approach.
That's a great way to end. Nicole, I could imagine a better expert to talk to us about Nigerian politics. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
You just heard from Nicole Grossman, a PhD candidate in international relations at the American University School of International Service. Her dissertation is based on fieldwork in Nigeria. So now we know why there are few women leaders in Nigeria. But what could increase their representation in government? Coming up, Assemblymember Kate Raymond Mamuno, who you heard at the top, shares the rest of her story, and we learn how a nonprofit helped her campaign.
They train us a lot on how to engage media, on how to use our branding, and that one alone has given me a kind of success.
More on that after the break.
Hello. Welcome to WHFR 89.3. I am the Diva. My show, Lyrical Infusion, is live on air Saturdays 5 to 8 p.m. It's not really a show. It's a whole vibe. It's me, the Diva, add music, and it's live. 89.3, and we're still making waves.
Every 36 seconds, a vehicle is stolen in the United States. You have the power to protect your car. Remove your valuables, roll up your windows completely, and always lock your doors and take your keys or fob. If you know something about a vehicle theft, call us at 1-800-TEL-NICB.
This is a special presentation of the WHFR Journal, The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women.
Welcome back to The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, a production of Foreign Policy. I'm Rena Ninen. If you're enjoying this show, please do check out our podcast, The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, or HERO for short. Our fifth season just ended, and our new season, All About Girls, is out now. Now we turn to northern Nigeria, where a big focus has been on women and the fear of violence. A recent survey by the DC-based Education and Policy and Data Center revealed that less than a third of all girls attend secondary school there. One reason? Women and girls in northern Nigeria are under the constant threat of violence. It's a headline you might be familiar with. Back in 2014, the Islamist militant group Boko Haram abducted 276 girls from a school in Borno State in northern Nigeria.
The incident has now become an international cause, in large part due to a social media campaign titled Bring Back Our Girls.
Boko Haram is still harming many in this region. The name literally translates to Western education is forbidden. And women and girls there face various other challenges: high rates of child marriage, low numbers of girls in school, and gender-based violence, just to name a few. And yet, despite these obstacles, Honorable Kate Raymond Mamuno managed to get an education, become an assembly member. She represents part of Adamawa State, which is in northeast Nigeria, directly adjacent to Borno State and also under threat from Boko Haram. So how did she do it? First, some courage. But also, Mamuno got help from a nonprofit focused on influencing male voters. Reporter Yechenu Sesetu has more.
Kate Raymond Mamuno says nonprofits played a big role in her political journey.
Honestly, I would have not reached this position without the help of the Connected Development and other NGOs. They trained us in media engagement, citizenry engagement.
One of these NGOs is Connected Development, or CODE. It was started in 2012 by Hamzat Lawal. Their first goal was to hold the Nigerian government accountable for a deadly lead poisoning outbreak. Lowell says the organization then expanded its mission to empower marginalized communities throughout Africa to speak out against unchecked governmental power.
What we do is we expose their shortcomings in empowering communities and citizens with tools and access to knowledge and information so they can ask the right questions.
A big part of that mission is helping women in Africa overcome injustice. This, he says, was inspired by his mother's experience.
So she, as a teenager, when she finished junior secondary school and trying to continue her education, you know, they literally ganged up against her, citing culture and religion and saying, you know, she should go and get married. And at that time, she was just less than 18 years. So whenever she tell me the story, I see the bitterness and sadness in her face. And that really, you know, motivated me to start advocating for the end of early child marriage and girl child marriage and forceful marriage, and also ensuring that every girl, irrespective of where they are, get access to timely and quality education.
Hamzat says in order to get more women in power, you have to start with getting more girls in school. According to CODE, more than 3 out of 5 children who have dropped out of school are girls, and early marriage also often cuts off their education since men insist their wives stay at home. That needs to change, says CODE's program manager, Zaliha Lawal.
When you look at the research, girls are the most disadvantaged because also the period
where these classes take place, the girl is supposed to be doing house chores. So education is not all about the book that we learn, but we also know that it's provide life skills, and life skills comes with public speaking and other form of leadership. So I think the future is even now.
CODE is now working to get even more girls in school. They've teamed up with the Malala Fund to push for free education for girls in Adamawa State. If you want to see the future of CODE's vision for Nigeria, look no further than their own offices. There, management positions are evenly split between men and women. And this is why the work in schools is so important, says Lomika Mamunu. Education opens doors for opportunity.
If you are a little bit educated, you know how to handle issues. You know how to go about mobilizing people to come to terms with you, to come to understand you better.
This brings us to CODE's other major form of gender advocacy, helping women get elected to office.
They train us a lot on how to engage media, on how to use our branding, and that one alone has given me a kind of success in achieving what I am today.
Beyond making it possible for women to run, Hamzat also likes to remind voters that in fact Nigeria was once ruled by women.
If you go back memory lane, you had Queen Amina Uzazao, who led men into war and conquered nations and brought victory to her people. If you go down memory lane, in the same country, Nigeria, you see women have led. But because men have seen the strength, the powers, the innovation, ideas, and how women continue to serve, because women are natural leaders. So they've become scared over time, and now they've put together a stumbling block.
Hamzat is proud that CODE helped Mamunu get elected to office. He hopes that the more women are represented, the more gender issues like increasing access to education for girls will be prioritized by the Nigerian government. He also knows there's much work to be done, such as changing the laws in the Nigerian constitution that will make it easier for women to become independent candidates. They've started a hashtag campaign, Not So Feminine to Run. The next national election is in 3 years. Lowell hopes more women will be inspired to break through the political glass ceiling.
For us to make progress, for us to prosper, we must allow women to take leadership positions. We cannot define the role of women.
Beginning in the classroom and leading up to the highest levels of government, Hamzat Lowell and others at CODE are hopeful that one day, once again, a woman will lead Nigeria.
I'm optimistic, and I strongly believe that the female presidency is possible in Nigeria. I want to see this in my own time, where I would be proud to tell my children that leadership is not, the face of leadership is not only the face of men.
For the hidden economics of remarkable women, I am Yechinu Sasitu.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, or HERO for short. If you like what you've heard, please make sure to check out our podcast. Our latest season just wrapped up. It was all about accountability. For example, the government of Kenya pledged to end gender-based violence by 2026.
Kenya commits itself to fully enforce gender-based violence laws and policies by adopting a gender-based violence indicator in the government performance contract.
It's ambitious to make these kinds of pledges, but it's much harder to achieve these lofty goals. Are these leaders really delivering on these promises for women and girls? And now we're debuting a whole new season. It's all about girls and ways to increase their power. Make sure to follow The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women on Apple or wherever you get your podcast. And that does it for today's show. The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women is a production of Foreign Policy and is made possible through funding in part from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women is hosted by me, Brina Ninen. Laura Rosbrow-Tellum is our senior producer. Rob Sachs, our managing director. Production assistance provided by Nicholas Petrie Mitchell. Thanks for listening.
Stay tuned for Kitty Love and Highway 61 coming up at the top of the hour here on 89.3 WHFR, the station that makes waves.
Earn your associate's degree in applied sciences with Henry Ford College's Automotive Technology program. This program offers an in-depth study of multiple systems found in today's vehicles. HFC's Automotive Technology program is fully certified by the National Institute for Automotive Technology program by the ASE Educational Foundation. For more information on this or any other area of study, visit hfcc.edu today.
From the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. Highway 61 with Kitty Love is next.